Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, my guest today is Skip Blankley of Jux Media and No Box Creatives. Skip has been an entrepreneur in the marketing space for almost 15 years. His first company, No Box Creatives, was built to help companies establish a strong online presence through a modern website and strong SEO. Jux Media is the evolution of that company in that it takes a strong brand and helps them drive traffic and leads through content marketing with an emphasis on video. Today, we're going to be discussing Skip's journey of building his agencies and what he's learned along the way. Thanks so much for joining us today, Skip.
Absolutely. Glad to be here, Julia. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's dive into a couple questions so we can get to know you a little bit. So where are you tuning in from today?
I'm in Tucker, Georgia, which is a suburb just outside of Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay. Very nice. And what really motivates you as an entrepreneur?
Oh man, that's a loaded question. I think if I could go back to day one of entrepreneurship, I think the biggest motivator is just freedom, independence, autonomy, being able to be my own boss. I have punk rock roots, and any form of authority, whether it was a teacher or a boss or even my parents for that matter, I certainly went through that phase. I was not a fan of anyone telling me what to do. And yeah. So I've matured. I've grown out of the adolescent punk rock phase, and I'd say I'm more of a mature punk rocker, but I still have that in me, and I'm very driven to just build a life on my terms, and I always have been.
Yeah.
And entrepreneurship, you know, is hands down, I think, one of the best ways to pull that off. And so I think it was something that has just ingrained in me from day one, as far back as I can remember. I was a big fan of saying no.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Very cool. So how do you grow and push yourself as an entrepreneur?
To be honest, I think it's several ways. So from a business standpoint, I'm always reading, I'm always taking classes, I'm watching YouTube videos, I'm reading blogs, I'm reading books, I'm educating myself on all things business. But I also firmly believe that being an entrepreneur is not just about being a good business person. It's also just about being a good person. And so my personal development is also, I would say, equally, if not even more so important than staying on top of my business acumen and staying on top of the latest trends and marketing or design or whatever the case may be. I think personal development and personal growth is just as important as learning and staying on top of everything related to business. And that's also something that I've been a big fan of for many years now. I was a personal development junkie for years, and I'm recovering from that junkie phase, but still very involved in that space through, reading of various books and following of various teachers and whatnot. But yeah, I think it's both. I think to me, it's a balance between staying on top of business as well as your personal growth.
Yeah, that's really well said. I like that. I think that's a really good point. And so how did you get into digital marketing originally?
So I got into it originally. I had worked in the restaurant industry for several years, and I got the bug in my mid-20s to build my own thing. And because I had experience in the restaurant industry, and I had several contacts within that industry, I said, okay, well, what can I do on my own terms, on my own time? And what services can I sell to all the contacts that I have? And at the time it was, mostly restaurant owners and managers. And so I decided I was going to offer web design social media marketing and just general online marketing. And this was in, you know, 2006 or 2007. And, you know, social media, like there was, I can't tell you how many times I was talking to a restaurant owner and saying, you need to be on Facebook, or you need to be paying more attention to Google search results and all those things and these listing directories. And they just rolled their eyes and said, you know, what are you talking about? And nowadays, obviously, everyone knows good and well that they need to not only be on these platforms, but they need to be using them, but especially in the restaurant industry. But yeah, to me, it was an easy in because I already had contacts, and so I was able to just learn the ropes. And at the time, again, everything was very new. So there was plenty of blogs out there and plenty of resources, but not nearly what we have today. But I just taught myself everything I could about marketing, and then taught myself everything I could about building websites. And so I, you know, learned to code the sites from scratch using HTML and CSS, and then, you know, WordPress came along and automated most of that. And then, you know, slowly but surely over time, all the marketing tools started to emerge, you know, the Hootsuites and whatnot. So you could even automate some of the social posting. And then now the online marketing space is, you know, filled with tons of softwares and automation platforms out there. So it's been fun to watch it all evolve and be a part of it. But yeah, to answer your question, it all started with just me looking for an opportunity to work for myself and find some easy wins in the form of sales through the network that I had access to at the time.
Very cool. So tell us about Jux Media, and then, what was the sort of the thing that just sort of tipped you over the edge and made you decide to bite the bullet and start it?
So yeah, so No Box Creatives was not my first agency. The first agency was Social Relish. That was the one that was solely focused on the restaurant industry.
Okay.
I quickly realized that the restaurant industry did not have the budget for someone to, you know, build a new flashy website and to manage their online marketing. A lot of restaurants are on a hairline budget. And so I quickly evolved Social Relish into No Box Creatives, which was offering essentially the same services: web design, SEO, social media marketing for any and every company. I realized that I wanted to be in multiple industries. I wanted to learn as much about all the different industries and all the different types of business that I could. And then Juxt was the evolution of that. So No Box was again focused on web design and just general online marketing in the form of, you know, social media, SEO, that kind of thing. And then Juxt to me came about because I kept getting requests for video production, and I kept getting requests for more just content, because content is in fact king. You know, whether it's, you know, blogs or podcasts like this one or videos, more and more clients were asking for help creating content. And so I decided to form Juxt because I knew that there was enough of a difference between, there's obviously a Venn diagram and an overlap between No Box and Juxt, but Juxt was very specifically and solely focused on content creation and using that content for lead generation.
Gotcha.
So I essentially made the decision to start that company when I found a partner to help with the video production side of things. And I got enough requests from my clients to where I knew it made sense to get this thing going.
Very cool. So when you were first starting out growing your agency, what challenges did you have to overcome? And then how did you overcome those?
So I think one of the biggest challenges for an agency when they first get started, at least in my experience, was finding a place where in which you have enough money coming in to where it makes sense to start outsourcing and bringing on help.
Yeah.
It's a very fine line because if you know, you could have there are ebbs and flows, there are good weeks and bad weeks and good months and bad months, good quarters, bad quarters. And if you get, you know, if the floodgates open and the stars align and all of a sudden you have, you know, so much more work coming in than you had just 2 months ago, you feel like, okay, I've got the money coming in, let's go hire someone, hire another person, let's go grow the business and start, or even, you know, put that money towards, you know, your own marketing, your own advertising. But then the well dries up, you know, because you've been focused on those clients, you've been focused on training people, you've been focused on all of these other internal business development items, and now your pipeline is empty.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't have those leads coming in anymore. And so that's one of the lessons I learned the hard way in the early days, was you need to be riding both of those at the simultaneously. You need to keep a full pipeline. You need to keep clients coming in the door while you're simultaneously focused on growing your own business and serving your existing clients. And so, finding the right people and building up the reserves and capital to be able to afford them, even if the well does dry up for a month or two before you have a chance to bring anyone else in, is a lesson I had to learn the hard way.
Yeah, such a valuable lesson. And it's so important. Just that emphasis on working on the business as well as working in the business, which is so hard to balance in those early days for sure, but such an important lesson.
Indeed.
So how does Jux Media set themselves apart from other agencies in a saturated market?
I think, and everyone says this, and it's so cliche, and it's ridiculous even hearing myself say it, but we just do a really good job at what we do. We're very professional. I can't tell you how many times I've worked with a client who has worked with another web design company or another video production company or another marketing agency, and then they start working with us and they just sing our praises and say how much of a breath of fresh air we are to work with us because we're just professional. And to be honest, it's frustrating because I feel like there are a lot of companies out there that are, you know, they may be really good at what they do, whether it's video production or SEO or web design, but if they're not providing their client with a good user experience, user experience being, you know, from the onboarding, the sales process throughout, you know, providing updates and keeping them in up to date with everything that's going on that you're, that you're working on. It's just these little touch points, you know, with the client and, you know, sending them gifts at Christmas and little things like that. We strive to provide as excellent an experience for our customers from day one until the day that we depart, we part ways and everything in between. And so, again, it's super cliche and I feel like a lot of people say that, but our level of professionalism and our ability to get the job done right, I think is what sets us apart from a lot of other companies out there.
Very cool. So what are some of the biggest challenges that you encounter on a day-to-day basis?
Day-to-day basis, that's a tough question. I think, again, it's about, I think time, you know, time allocation, making sure that you're working on what you need to be working on.
Yes.
You know, after 15 years, it's still a challenge. You know, you'll spend, you know, something pops up in your inbox or an opportunity lands on your plate for a new client or for a new, you know, internal business development opportunity or whatever the case may be. And I, as an entrepreneur, and I know that this is something that a lot of other entrepreneur types are struggle with, and I am no different by any stretch, is that shiny object syndrome where you're just constantly having to wrangle yourself in, pull yourself back in. Like, okay, that seems cool. That looks like a lot of fun. And that looks like a really good opportunity, but you've got, you know, X, Y, and Z to focus on right now. Let's finish those up. And then you've got permission to go work on that other thing. And so I think, personally, and that's where, you know, a lot of the personal development stuff really comes in for me, is I notice when I start to chase a lot of those shiny objects, I have to check myself and say, you're chasing these because you're not focused. You're chasing those because you haven't taken the time to center yourself recently.
Yeah.
And so that's when I'll, you know, center myself. I'll start meditating more. I'll start exercising more. I'll start journaling more to kind of remind myself, okay, this is the big picture. This is what you need to be focused on. All of those other opportunities, you know, jot them down on a notepad. And I literally have a someday maybe list and on a Google Doc that I just, anytime a random idea comes up, you know, I'll jot it down on my phone or I'll jot it down on a piece of paper, but it always ends up getting dumped into my someday maybe list. Mm-hmm. And I try to, you know, revisit that once a quarter, but yeah, in terms of biggest challenges on a daily basis, it's definitely having to constantly remind myself that I need to stay focused on what it is that I have in front of me and stop chasing all those shiny objects as appealing as they may seem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think preparation is a big key to that as well. I know if I am prepared the night before and I've got my, you know, my to-do list organized, and I know what I'm tackling the day, what I'm going to tackle the day before. Things just go so much smoother that day. And whenever I am, when I'm creating that list, doing it through the lens of priority, what is priority? What's going to move the needle? And thinking about it that way, that's been super helpful for me personally.
Agreed. Yeah. I have a morning journal as a part of my routine that at the top of it lists the things that I need to be focused on. And so that is something that helps keep me grounded and focused. But again, I definitely have that entrepreneurial with a bit of the touch of ADD that wants to go after all those other shiny opportunities out there.
Yeah. It's the entrepreneur in you that'll just run wild if you let it.
Yeah, indeed.
So I'd love to talk about sales a little bit. So What are your tips for bringing in more leads and closing more sales?
For me, sales is all about the relationship, the your personability, like being personable with the people you're reaching out to, being transparent, being honest. I think it's one of the best ways to avoid sounding like a salesperson.
Yeah.
In my early 20s, I worked at Best Buy, and although we weren't being paid on commission, working in retail taught me a lot about sales, in that, and it was almost by accident because I was totally crushing their sales numbers. And had we been paid on commission, I would have been doing quite well. And I had several managers tell me how great of a job I was doing. And every time they'd come and ask, or even, you know, fellow employees would come and ask, how I was able to, you know, do so well in sales. And I just looked at them and said, I did exactly what they actually in Best Buy actually did a pretty decent job of training us on this. And it was, they trained us to listen, you know, to ask the right questions and to listen intently and not try to sell someone something they don't need. I think that is one of the easiest ways to be thrown into a category of used car salesman that no one wants to talk to or hear from, or engage with. And one of the best ways to avoid that, in my opinion, is to, again, have a conversation and ask the right questions. And knowing what questions to ask is not that difficult. You know, if you're in sales, determining the best questions to ask to get the answers you need to in order to evaluate their needs and then provide them with the solution that will solve their problems. And that all starts with just being personable and again, not being pushy, not using cheesy sales tactics. I squirm every time I, you know, start writing an email or even hear myself in conversations during a sales meeting. You know, I check myself almost instantly. Because at this point I think it's pretty well ingrained in me to not be that person.
Yeah.
But occasionally I do feel that person surfacing when I'm like, I really want the sale and I really want this project. I do kind of feel that salesy type person, you know, resurface, and I smash it down, you know, the second I start to feel it. But I think, you know, again, to answer your question, just be yourself, be honest. Don't try to sell people things they don't need. I was just having a conversation with a client. I will not name the company, but she's having some issues. The company she purchased her domain through. And I agreed with her that, you know, 10 years ago, this company was great. And now they've ultimately replaced their customer service and customer support team with a bunch of salespeople that are just trying to upsell you on services and products that you don't need. Cause I'm having an exchange with her about the things that they're trying to sell her on.
Yeah.
And I'm telling her, no, you don't need that. And like, why would they even like the, me hearing that they've offered her that, knowing good and well that there's no reason that she does not need that particular product or service from this company, but they're just pushing, you know, these products and services rather than providing support. And so, I personally moved away from this company. I was spending thousands of dollars every month, through, the services we provide through hosting and domains and email services. It took me about a year. But we have successfully at this point moved away from this company entirely because I felt that groundswell of salesy nonsense surfacing several years ago. And over time, it just got so bad to where I was just like, we're moving away. Like all you want to do is sell me. You're not actually providing the support that we need. Mm-hmm. And so I'm gone, you know, we're out. And so that those thousands of dollars are now being spent with one of their rivals. And I am so happy about that, to be honest, like, cause you vote with your dollars, you know?
Yeah.
And by moving my dollars away from this company, that was super over the top sales pitchy to a company that actually provides legitimate support was an amazing feeling to finally be done with that. But, long-winded way of saying, you know, don't be a salesperson, you know, be someone who's willing to have a conversation, listen to your client, find out what they need, and don't wait for the cues. I think one thing that I see a lot of people that are, when I'm being pitched something, a lot of people will, they'll hear, you know, a magic word where I say I'm having trouble with A, B, or C, and, you know, their training has essentially queued them up so that when they hear that particular problem, they pounce on the opportunity to try to sell me on this thing that can maybe potentially solve that, rather than continuing to listen to find out why I'm having that problem and why I need help and what else we could be doing or what else they could be doing that's kind of supplemental to that, and not just, you know, jump pouncing on the first opportunity to sell somebody something. So again, listen with, you know, intent, listen carefully and take notes and do research. Don't just decide then and there that this is what we need to sell them on. And in this, obviously when you're selling a product, it's a different space, but if you're selling services, especially to small businesses, you know, they need their money. They have a very, especially smaller businesses, they have a thin budget, and you know, for companies to rob them of that much needed budget is a crime. And so don't be that person, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, just have their best intentions at heart. I think, you know, if you've always got that running through in the back of your mind, and you're coming from a place of being helpful, you're just asking those questions of how can I be uncovering those pain points and then effectively delivering value to them and helping their business. You're just coming from a different place than when it's all about what am I going to get out of this relationship? And you're just trying to sell them something that's maybe they don't even need.
Yep. Yeah. Just don't be that person. It's not just a sales thing either. It's no one likes that person, whether they're selling or not, because what you do for a living will creep into your day to day. And you'll find yourself, if you're a creepy used car salesman, you're going to be a creepy used car salesman at home, you know, at social events. And so just don't be that person.
Yeah, I agree. So how do you create happy, loyal clients? Do you have any tips for creating really happy clients?
I think to echo what I just said, you know, really, because the sales process is never done when you're in the services space. You know, you're always looking for opportunities to upsell clients, but not selling them things they don't need, but, you know, listening intently and knowing, you know, what the client's needs are throughout the sales process, throughout the client management process. Once they've been on board and once you're working on a project, you know, we do a lot of retainer work where we're doing a lot of SEO and ad management. And so continuing to listen to the clients and staying on top of those conversations in a way that allows you to say, you know, I've noticed that, you know, your company gets a lot of referrals. You get a lot of word of mouth, you know, through your existing client base, which is awesome. You know, here's another really good way to amplify that. And just providing those tips and tricks, you know, and oftentimes I feel like I'm consulting, without, you know, charging for it through the agency, which is fine. I maintaining that healthy relationship, knowing that the client trusts me, trusts everyone that we work with, everyone that they interact with in the company, because we're providing them with these, like, you know, consulting style tips and tricks and guidance. Because, you know, as a business owner, you know, and I think a lot of marketers who own their own businesses, own their own agencies, you're getting the best of both worlds. Because if you're an entrepreneur and you've built something from the ground up. You know sales, you know marketing, you know operations, you know hiring and firing. Like if you've built all of those things and done all of those things, worn all those hats yourself, then if you're helping a client who maybe has done really well in three of the five categories, but they're really suffering on maybe the tech side of things, or they're really suffering on, in other categories, and you say, well, hey, this is, I can't tell you how many times I've referred the various software platforms that we use to help us manage our day-to-day, like project management softwares and sales management, CRMs. And like, I will make referrals because I see clients starting to hit these pain points where they're growing and they're having a really hard time staying on top of their projects or staying on top of their sales or staying on top of all these different things. And we're like, hey, this is something we use. And again, I'm not getting commission for that referral or anything.
Yeah.
But I'm making that recommendation.
Something you believe in. It's been helpful for
exactly.
You. Yeah,
exactly. And so just providing them with that is, I think, hands down, one of the best ways to keep them happy and just to maintain a really solid relationship. That's where the longer you can work with a client, the more referrals they're going to send your way, the more money they're going to ultimately end up giving you at the end of the day. Like it's, and again, but not asking for money, not asking for sales that they don't need, but focusing on the ones that you know they need.
Yeah.
The more you stay in tune with them, their needs, their company, their growth pains, you know, the pain points that they're experiencing, the better suited you are to provide them with the recommendations that they actually need at that point. And so I think that having those relationships, you know, I have several clients that, you know, most clients actually, you know, we share, you know, pictures of our kids and we talk about what our plans are for the weekend. You know, it's maintaining a relationship that's beyond, you know, that professional, you know, we're doing a service and you're writing us a check, you know, like
yeah.
Moving beyond that. And again, that all starts in the sales process, you know, and it has a chance to evolve throughout the life of the relationship with that particular client.
Yeah, no, I love that. I agree 100%. It's so important to just have those genuine focus on really building that genuine relationship and delivering honest, you know, quality results. So
yeah, absolutely.
So do you have any productivity hacks to help save you time that you'd like to share?
Absolutely. When it comes to productivity, I am not the best, but I do feel like I've gotten really good at it over the years. And I think that if I could narrow it down to a few things, I think number one is time blocking, you know, setting aside time on your calendar to say, okay, for these 2 hours, I am working on this, you know, this particular
so
project,
huge.
This particular task, if it's something, and also be flexible with that time. My wife gives me a hard time because the time space continuum and me don't get along. I'm really bad about underestimating how long something's going to take, whether it's a household chore or a task for a client or even something we're working on with the company. I'm really bad about saying, oh yeah, that'll take 20 minutes, but it actually takes an hour.
Yeah.
And so being realistic with yourself and then setting aside more than enough time to get something done.
Yeah.
So studying that time block, put it in that in your calendar and saying, okay, between, you know, if you don't have time, if you know that between 9 and 5, you're swamped with, you know, all the day-to-day stuff and you've got this other thing that needs to be done, you know, wake up early, you know, between 7 and 9, block off your calendar before anyone else in the house wakes up or gets the day going and just get that thing done.
Yes.
And so blocking out the time is a huge one. I also use something called the Pomodoro technique. The Pomodoro is Italian for tomato, or the origin story is, I can't remember the guy's name, but he took one of those old school tomato timers. It was like one of those oven timers. You would just turn the knob and it would tick, 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 tick until,
yeah,
you know, it would ding at the end. And he decided he was trying to get something done, but he kept getting distracted. So he turned the timer to 20 minutes and said, okay, for 20 minutes, I'm going to focus on this task and nothing else. And this is before Facebook and text messages and all the dings and, you know, notifications that we get every 30 seconds, it feels like these days.
Yeah.
But even then, you know, they were still struggling with, you know, distractions because there was, you know, believe it or not, plenty of things to be distracted by long before the internet. But anyway, so for that 20 minutes, he stayed focused and he would not think about or do anything else until that 20 minutes was up. If something did pop into his head, he would jot it down on a piece of paper and then put it aside to get it out of his head and onto that paper so that when he's done with that 20 minute, you know, batch of time, he can now go focus on whatever it is that popped up in his head. So I do that. I do that in 40 minute increments. So for 40 minutes, I set a timer on my computer. And after the end of 40 minutes, my computer fades and the screen freezes. I can, you know, snooze it and keep working if I need to finish an email real quick or if I need to finish something real fast. But what that does is when I say start timer for 40 minutes, I am not going to do anything else. I'm not going to, if my phone dings or if, you know, I think of another random idea, I ignore it. Or again, if it is something that I do need to like, oh crap, I need to do X, Y, or Z, I write it down real fast and then I go back to what it is that I'm working on. That has been huge. And then every 40 minutes that timer goes off, I stand up, I stretch, I breathe. I'll do a quick exercise. I'll run to the restroom. I'll get a glass of water. I'll do something to move my body. Cause that's another big thing is, you know, the sedentary lifestyle is becoming, you know, what smoking was 30 years ago or what, I mean, what it still is today for that matter. But, being sedentary for too long, I also notice my brain starts to want to get distracted. And so if I get up, I allow my mind that opportunity to kind of, you know, go outside, get some fresh air and just, you know, stretch out a little bit. I'm able to then come back to that next session, refreshed to some degree. And then I'd say the other big item is noise canceling headphones with ambient music. I think for, I have friends that also will, you know, listen to fast paced, you know, hip hop or hard rock music while they work. But for me personally, if there's anything, I'm a musician. And so if I hear anything with a beat, then I'm instantly wanting to tap and I'm wanting to, you know, play along or start air drumming or sing along to the lyrics. And so for me, what works best is, ambient, atmospheric sounds. And I put in noise canceling headphones and I just listen to that while I work. And it allows Very me cool. to block out the outside world, laser sharp focus. And again, because it's that ambient music, I'm able to, again, just stay laser focused. I don't get distracted by a beat or a tempo or lyrics, you know, which yeah. always distract me because I love listening to music. And so if I listen to that kind of stuff while I'm trying to work, I can't get anything done because I find myself just tapping or air drumming. So
exactly.
I think those three things are definitely, there's a ton more, but I think those are the tip of the iceberg, but a very important tip.
Yeah. Those are really great tips. I really appreciate you sharing those with us. So we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but first I'd love to know where you see Jux Media in 5 years time.
Jux Media in 5 years time, I see doing a lot of what we're doing now, but I honestly feel like we may niche down. Right now we're offering our services mainly to software companies and service companies, professional services and software companies. I love the outdoors. I love being outside. I love hiking and kayaking and mountain biking and doing anything and everything outside. And I just turned 40 late last year. And at this point in my life, I'm realizing that after 15 years of sitting in front of a computer and staring at a screen all day, I'm probably going to I would probably add years to my life if I spend more time on my feet outside, enjoying the outdoors, which I do in every moment I can outside of work, but I still spend a lot of time in front of a computer. And so for me, I would love for Jux to evolve into a company that focuses on providing, you know, video production and content creation services for outdoor brands. My partner and other individuals within the company agree that we're all very outdoorsy people. And so that's something that excites us. And so we may end up morphing into that model where we just focused on brands that encourage people to get outside, including ourselves, you know, working on projects that get us outside versus, you know, in a stuffy office interviewing clients. But
yeah,
that remains to be seen, but I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah, very cool. That's super exciting. So we're getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but first we have the Fast Five, which are five rapid fire questions. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
To be honest, narrowing it down to one would be impossible. I think more recently, a book called Deep Work by Cal Newport, I believe, is a very important book. I think it's something that anyone, and it touches on everything that we just got done talking about, you know, staying focused, avoiding distractions, avoiding that shiny object, and sitting down and focusing on what really matters so mm-hmm. you can get the work done you need to get done.
Yeah.
That's an incredible book. The Art of Impossible, Stephen Kotler, I think, is the author of that one. Getting Things Done by David Allen is, I think, the Bible of productivity. 4-hour work week. I honestly can say that I probably would not be sitting here today if it weren't for that book. I think Tim Ferriss is brilliant. And I think the 4-hour work week played a pivotal role in not only my development as an entrepreneur, but I think for thousands of others as well.
Yes.
And then The E-Myth Revisited is an incredible book. I think every early stage or even late stage entrepreneur should read or reread. I revisit that one every few years. And then I would say The War of Art, not The Art of War, but The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield is an incredible book for any entrepreneur that ever feels stuck and, you know, questioning why it is they're doing what they're doing. It is basically the halftime down by 7 at the Super Bowl, or 2 minutes, you know, left in the Super Bowl, you're down by 7, pep talk that the coach would give the team, condensed into a book. I think it's a very inspiring and motivational book that I revisit pretty frequently.
Awesome.
And there's literally hundreds of others, but I think if I had to narrow it down to a few, that those would be them.
Awesome. And then, so what does your morning routine look like?
Well, the morning routine has changed dramatically, as we discussed before hopping yeah. on. I just had my first little boy, Bryson. He was born on February 6th. And so it's been 3 weeks, or almost Sunday will be 3 weeks. And so my morning routine has changed dramatically.
Yes.
I would say pre-baby, my morning routine was waking up around 6 a.m. and immediately consuming a bunch of coffee, a bunch of water and a cup of coffee that I would sip on until noon. But yeah, getting hydrated right away. And then apple cider vinegar is also a part of my morning routine to kind of get the juices flowing. And then I would work out for at least 20 minutes, focusing on either strength or cardio, depending on what the day was. Mm-hmm. And then immediately after doing that, I would sit down, journal, and meditate before getting started on work. So that whole routine would take anywhere between 45 minutes to maybe an hour and 15 minutes, depending on how long I wanted to work out. But the meditation and the journaling, as much as the hydration and the exercise, is a incredible way to get primed for yeah. a productive day. And I think also another thing I should throw in there too is I would typically listen to, you know, inspirational or motivational YouTube videos or podcasts in the morning, you know, that are, you know, business or personal nice. Development related, so that I yeah. kind of get my head. Even at this point in my life, I still find it puzzling that I'll, you know, I can go to bed super motivated and inspired. And then sometimes I just wake up maybe from a bad night of sleep or something, and I feel like I have to kind of jumpstart that inspiration again. And so the exercise and the, headphones on with some inspirational words coming in is a really good way to just get the mind and the body ready for a productive day. But now it's changed. I'm now feeding a little one. And it's broken up. My morning routine remains the same, but mm-hmm. it now takes about 2.5 hours
yeah.
instead of an hour. So
it does. It does when you have little ones, but, yeah, it's 100% worth it though.
Indeed. Yeah.
So is there a CEO that you follow or study?
Oh man. I can't say that I really study many CEOs. I study and follow more people in the personal development space. And I would say this too, because he is, CEO. I mean, so Tim Ferriss, I think has been an inspiration for years. Tom Bilyeu, the founder of Quest Nutrition, and he has a podcast called Impact Theory. I definitely follow and study them. I think I spend more time studying principles of business rather than the individuals. I never meet your heroes is something I heard years back. And as I got older and started to learn more about people that I looked up to, I quickly realized that everyone has their flaws, and some people wear them on their sleeve and some people bury them deep down inside. Yeah. So to me, extracting what's useful from, various entrepreneurs, whether they are, Elon Musk, I think, is someone that a lot of people look up to, but, he's been divorced and he's just this high, he's a bit of a mess. And, in the personal, I would say he's a bit of a mess, but he definitely has his flaws. And I think any CEO, any entrepreneur is going to have their flaws. So I tend to not look up to the individual, but extract from that individual what I find useful and then make it my own. So it's less about the person and more about what they do, and how they do it. And then, not necessarily focusing too much on them and their personality.
Awesome. I love that answer. And then what is your favorite online tool?
I would say Asana, is the project management software hands down. It is the heart of my business. It is the heart of my businesses, I should say. It is hands down, it has been the biggest game changer for me when it comes to managing teams, when it comes to staying on top of the tasks and what I need to be focused on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. Mm-hmm. It is a game changer. I cannot imagine life without it, let alone running businesses without it. It is a game changer for me. It has been a game changer for me.
Yes, we use Asana as well. And I love it. And then, so last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Working smarter, not harder. I came from a background of, and I'm not saying you should not work hard, because outworking the competition can certainly get you where you want to be. But it's a delicate balance between working smarter and harder. But I think spending the time, there's Abe Lincoln, I think, may have said this quote, may be misattributing, but he said something along the lines of, if I had 5 hours to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first 4 sharpening the axe. And I could not agree more, because if you're just chopping down a tree with a dull axe, working harder, quote unquote, you're doing a lot more and you're getting the same result as the person who spent 4 hours leisurely sharpening the axe and spending 1 hour focused intently on chopping down that tree with the sharpest blade they could get their hands on. And I think, if you replace the axe with your mind and the tree with your tasks, then you've got a recipe for success, in my opinion. I think that, spending the time, taking the time to find out what it is you need to be focused on, instead of just diving in and just, going nuts on something.
Yeah.
Can be very useful. But I also say that with the caveat that I think all entrepreneurs need to jump in and just start working, because I also see a lot of people with paralysis by analysis. They start thinking too much about what they need to be working on and they don't get any work done.
So true.
If you find yourself getting anxious and find yourself getting, worked up and not getting anything done, then just start doing something. I'm a big fan of momentum.
Yeah.
So just start doing something. But if you realize what you're working on is not yielding the results you're looking for, then be ready to pivot. I think that's something I wish I was better at back then. And I still have room for improvement on everything we've talked about today, but that as well, I definitely still have room for improvement there. But I think in the early days, that would be some really good advice that I probably got that advice, but I probably also didn't listen to it. I would say work smarter, not harder.
Yep. And then I just want to add to that as well, you know, if it's something that you do on a regular basis, can that be automated? Is there a way you can be saving yourself time by automating that process? It's an email that you're writing over and over and over, like have a template put together. So yeah, that's a good thing to also put into practice.
Indeed. Getting good at delegation.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Skip. It was a pleasure to chat with you, and I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun, Julie. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.